Okay, we're back. WATD FM 95.9 FM, Friends with Benefits. And tonight's guest is Lloyd Sermons from the Southeast Regional Telehealth Resource Center, covering the states of Alabama, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. Lloyd received his associate's degree in computer science from Columbia State University in 1998. He immediately began his IT career working with TSYS, Total System Services of Columbus, Georgia, where he worked as a mainframe programmer. He worked a number of years with Columbus Regional as a systems analyst before entering into full-time ministry, where he served in pastoral leadership for nearly 14 years before joining the GPT team in August of 2010 as the BTOP, Broadband Technology Opportunities Program, project director. He completed his BS degree in Interdisciplinary Studies from Liberty University in 2009. Lloyd not only brings a sound knowledge of IT solutions, but also brings strong leadership and communication skills as the director of the Southeastern Telehealth Resource Center. Hi, Lloyd. How are you doing? Thank you for joining the show.
Hey, Joe. Doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, great. We've been discussing telehealth on the show each week and informing our listeners the benefits of receiving care in remote areas and even in our home. Blue Cirrus Consulting, our sponsor of the program, Michelle Hager, the managing partner of Blue Cirrus, is on the phone. Michelle, how are you? Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much. Thanks so much, Lloyd, for being here today.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So, Lloyd, please tell us about the Southeast Regional Telehealth Resource Centers and some of the services you offer.
Yeah, so, of course, we are one of 14 total telehealth resource centers around the country, two national resource centers, and then 12 regional. So we pretty much have the entire country covered from a telemedicine support standpoint. So I cover, as you mentioned a little bit earlier on, I cover the states of Alabama, Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina. Those are the states in my region. I have done a little bit of work with, like the U.S. Virgin Islands, talked a little bit with some folks in the Puerto Rico region, but for the most part, you know, those are the states that I cover. And we just provide technical assistance for those who are wanting to get into the telemedicine space or, you know, maybe they are wanting to expand on some telemedicine that they're doing. They can actually reach out to us and we can provide some technical support to them. I always like to make sure that I differentiate between technical assistance and, you know, what some would deem as tech support. So I can provide you information on starting a telemedicine program and things of that nature, but you know, I don't actually fix people's computers, and so
right.
Let's so technical assistance is a little different than providing tech support, but we do things like work group meetings for our stakeholders in our individual states. I do those on a quarterly basis, and that just helps to keep people up to speed on what's going on from a telemedicine standpoint in each one of those states. And then we also do some conferences, some telehealth conferences that are specific to telemedicine in our particular region. And then we have the National School of Applied Telehealth, which is online telemedicine courses. And those were designed for those who are brand new into telemedicine, maybe just getting into telemedicine. They're about three-hour courses. They are accredited, and they can get three continuing education credits if they take those courses as well.
Excellent, excellent. And I see that you're partnered with Global Partnership for Telehealth. Can you explain that partnership?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Global Partnership for Telehealth, formerly known as the Georgia Partnership for Telehealth, and many people still refer to us as the Georgia Partnership for Telehealth as well, but that is my parent company.
Okay.
So they are actually the grantee because as the Southeastern Telehealth Resource Center, it is a cooperative agreement through the Health Resources Services Administration. So it's a grant-funded opportunity, and it is a competitive grant. So every 3 years you have to rewrite that particular grant. So the Global Partnership for Telehealth is a telemedicine company, has a very large, one of the largest telemedicine networks in the country, and that is my parent company. So,
okay.
You know, of course, we work very closely with them, and actually started my career out with the company. So I've been doing telemedicine now for over 9 years. Much of that in various positions within the Global Partnership for Telehealth Company. And we do telemedicine in a lot of areas. It's more of a turnkey solution. So in other words, we provide kind of consultative services on the front end. People can order equipment through GPT, because GPT has relationships with a lot of equipment vendors as well. Do they provide the installation, the training, and then the ongoing technical support and things of that nature that are needed kind of as that telemedicine program just continues to move on. So,
right.
So I like to say, we kind of take the guesswork out of starting the telemedicine.
That's excellent. Program. Yeah, and that's what's needed. And I've been down there with Blue Saris and Michelle to attend some of your conferences, and they've been great. And I can't tell you, some of the sites I was able to see on the drive in southern Georgia from Atlanta. Huh, Michelle? There were some rural areas down there.
Fascinated.
I was fascinated.
Yes, fascinated.
The size of those farms.
The country.
The cotton farms.
Yeah, great country. We have a very diverse, as I always say, it's a very diverse country with kind of, Georgia having a little bit of everything, some coastline. So there's some coastline area. You have the plains, of course, a lot of farmland. You get up to the middle of the state. And you
beautiful.
Get a more hilly area.
Mm-hmm.
And then up in the north, you have some, what we call mountains. You guys probably don't consider them mountains.
They're the foothills. They're the foothills. Hey, Lloyd, I was going to say something though about the HRSA. That's a federally funded grant that you won. Which, congratulations on that. But that, in turn, doesn't that make most of your services, if not all, nearly free, if not completely free?
Yeah, that is correct. And so we are what is considered a free resource. And so anything that we typically do comes at no cost to those that reach out. Now, I say that with this particular caveat. HRSA does give us the right, to charge if they're, let's say someone reaches out to us and they say, hey, we're starting this telemedicine program. And it looks like it's going to be a lot of work. Then we do reserve the right, and HRSA gives us the right to charge anything, say, over 10 hours. We can actually charge consulting fees for that. Now, I will tell you this. A lot of times, I don't run into that very often. And probably if I were to run into that situation, then I would refer them out, to additional consultants, just because we don't have, in our shop, we don't necessarily have the resources to just spend a lot of time in helping someone fully develop. And so, I mean, if you guys know a good consulting firm that could help out with that, then,
and that's what
I'd be more than happy to refer them, somebody like a Blue Cirrus or someone like that. So.
And that's where we make a great team.
That's sweet of you.
It does. Yeah. And it makes it easy for people to kind of get those answers for telehealth and technology and all those different struggles that hospitals are trying to do. And the next topic I want to bring up is the rural health organizations who are struggling to find doctors and specialists down in the Southeast and all over the country. And we heard about the Maven Project, who is actually based up here in Massachusetts and maintains a network of volunteer specialists and doctors to help connect with each provider working at FQHCs and other community clinics serving underserved populations. Are you familiar with the Maven Project in SETRC?
Absolutely, yeah. Very familiar with them. I'm very active on LinkedIn, and so really a lot of my information and my connection with the Maven Project kind of comes through information that I get through, you know, posts and things of that off of LinkedIn. So, yes, I'm very familiar. And, you know, I love the idea. I mean, it's always great when you find physicians who are willing to volunteer their time. I mean, I just, you know, hats off. I mean, I think that's great. And then for, you know, someone like, you know, the folks that started the Maven Project to think outside of the box, of course, at the end of the day, you're meeting a need.
Right.
And one of the largest needs is there's still a large unserved and underserved population. And so I think anytime, you know, you see programs like the Maven Project, and there's some others out there who, you know, who really kind of focus in on, hey, how can we bring healthcare to these unserved and underserved populations? And so, yeah, I love the story. I love what they're doing.
I love it too. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're going to see a little more of that. I think you're going to see more of that popping up kind of across the country.
We talked about that a little bit the last few weeks, because with the population increasing as it is, the physician and clinician group decreasing, we sort of have to do more, because even not only are we not seeing more clinicians and physicians in particular coming out of med school, but also those physicians are retiring. So we're so glad that those folks in the Maven Project have decided to stay on as retired physicians. Otherwise, we really don't have, even with their help, we don't have enough clinicians to care for the population as it increases, but at least we're able to keep their expertise for a little bit longer. So that's a really good point.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's great. And there is such a large unserved and underserved population, and they need health care. That's the one thing, you know, we all, at the end of the day, no matter who we are, where we live, you know, we're all at some point needing health care, and hopefully it's quality health care that we receive.
Right, that's what's important.
Absolutely.
And you know, the Southeast seems like a perfect fit for telehealth. Are there any areas you find difficult to cover, any difficult stories where telehealth was proven to be successful in treating and caring for a patient?
Well, so our area and where we are is considered the stroke belt. You know, we do have a very unhealthy population, and, you know, there's always questions about, you know, why is that? But, you know, a lot of small hospitals struggle, of course, today, just keeping their doors open, and so much less being able to pay for, you know, specialty physicians and specialty services. And so I think really that's where telemedicine is a great fit. We see that in things like infectious disease, where they can contract with an infectious disease physician instead of hiring one on site.
Yeah.
The same thing with telestroke. And so, you know, small, whether it's a critical access hospital or just a small, maybe to medium rural hospital in a rural community, you know, they maybe can't afford to pay a neurologist, I think maybe around $300,000, kind of in our area is what it would cost.
Or more.
Hey, if I can, or more. If I can contract with a neurologist, maybe for, you know, $100 to maybe $200 an hour, then it changes the outlook for those stroke patients that come into those facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, you're going to connect up with a board-certified neurologist, and you're going to get high-quality care. And so, we have seen a couple scenarios where, in, you know, a small rural hospital in Alabama, for example. And I remember when I installed the telemedicine equipment in that hospital, the nurse, the ED nurse manager, she told me, she said, you know, We'll never use this. I mean, pretty much telling me I was wasting my time. So we'll never use this. That's what she said. And I remember after a few months coming back, you know, and just following up, checking on, seeing how things were going, you know, she had pretty much changed her tune. And the reason was now not only were the patients who were coming in with stroke symptoms being able to connect up immediately and receive care and have the neurologist, you know, determine whether or not they can receive the TPA, which is a clot-busting drug, but it was also about the patients that they were now keeping in the hospital that they traditionally would have just shipped out.
That's saving so rural hospitals.
It really is.
Yeah, they were able to keep patients in the hospital that they traditionally would have shipped out. Because when a patient comes in, if they look and they say, oh, we think it's a stroke, in the majority of these hospitals, they just automatically ship them out to the next tertiary, to the closest tertiary care center.
Because they didn't have a neurologist to be able to care for them. So, yeah, it makes complete sense.
Makes it even more
difficult. So the telemedicine, you know, if you just looked at it from a stroke standpoint, you know, telestroke in these hospitals can really change the outlook and change a lot of outcomes for the hospital.
Also, we're seeing school districts are increasingly turning to telehealth to help students with chronic conditions such as behavioral health, diabetes, and asthma. Do you believe telehealth can be utilized in the schools to treat children?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So my children, we are beneficiaries of our school system having a school-based telemedicine program. So I have three children. My daughter, who is a senior in high school, has done two telemedicine consults from school, from her nurse's clinic. And then I have a son who is 16, who's a sophomore in high school. He has actually done a telemedicine consult from school. And so absolutely, mm-hmm. you know, school-based telemedicine makes sense. And I always tell people, you know, the one place that you are required by law to send your children every day is school.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
And at the end of the day, you know, some parents, let's face it, you know, I mean, I have a good job. I have a job where my job is flexible. If I needed to get off and take my children to see the doctor, I mean, I could do that. But there's a lot of people who work in our area, in our region, who don't have that luxury. And so, you know, having a sick child for them could also mean it costing them their job. Or, you know, if you have to spend half a day at the physician's office, which is typically what happens. I mean, you end up having to take a half a day to a full day off. And so with telemedicine in the school-based clinics like we're seeing, really what happens is if the parent needs to take an hour's lunch and go be a part of that consult when they connect up with the physician, then they're able to do that. And so it really brings about more, you know, convenience for the family and for the, you know, for the school system as well, because the school system is paid by the number of kids they have in their seat.
Right.
And so that's right.
It just makes a lot of sense. And so what we're also seeing in that, too, from a school system standpoint, is the teachers are using the telemedicine equipment as well, so school systems aren't having to pay substitute teachers as much either. So.
Wow, that's interesting.
It's support for those nurses right there as school nurse as well, because the kids are getting, 70 to 80% of their meds during school hours. So these nurses then get support from other clinicians via telehealth. So there's a lot of benefits to school-based telehealth. It's great that you guys are supporting them so much, and those are great stories.
Yeah, that's true. The focus.
Yeah, if you take a child who's doing medication management, for example, and the mom takes that child to see the physician, you know, you have mom, child, and physician. But if you're doing it in a school-based setting, now you're able to actually, and we see this a lot, where you actually are able to have the principal, the teacher, the school nurse, the school counselor can all be in that consult together. So when you start talking about continuity of care,
right,
and looking at the child as a whole, it really makes a lot of sense.
It does, and it keeps everybody informed and on the same page with what's going on with that student and that parent's child. And people have to understand that the focus on school-based telehealth programs is to create a platform that can address all of the students' health needs keeping him or her in school, reducing stress on the family, and reducing the likelihood of a neglected or missed care. Haywood Hospital here in Massachusetts did a pilot on school-based telehealth programs in Ayr, Mass., and they were able to successfully treat 63 children for psych in 1 month. So they got a lot done in that pilot, and now their school-based telehealth program is an example to other schools in Massachusetts of how to keep kids in their seat and keep people informed of, you know, what's best for their child or student. So that's great. I wanted to just kind of move this.
It's a great pilot.
Yeah, it is a great pilot. I want to move this along and ask you, you know, what other support can you offer? Is there information on your website? Why don't you let us know what the website is and how to get on that? And
the website is a great. I try to keep our website up to date with current information as much as I possibly can, and it's short for Southeastern Telehealth Resource Center. So it's www.S as in Sam, E as in Echo, T as in Tom, R as in Roger, and C as in Cat, SETRC.US. And if you go to my Learn page, what I do is I kind of break our page down, my resource page. I have all the Medicare information, updated Medicare stuff.
Right.
But then I break my states down by rules and regulations, and just like to use that page to send people there for things. You know, we have sample consent to treat forms and stuff like that on there.
And oh, those are huge. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So what's coming up, SETRC, in the end of the year and in 2020?
Yep, so we're winding down. We just recently did our Florida telehealth workshop down in Melbourne, Florida. And so it was great seeing you guys there.
Yeah, that was great.
December's going to be looking forward to a quiet month as we wind. I've had a very busy year. But then we ramp back up, of course. We'll start doing our work group meetings in our state starting in January. We'll have some one-day workshops that we will plan for our states. But then we're November of 2020, next year, we're doing a large regional telehealth conference, which mm-hmm. is a little bit different for us. That's going to be...
Meaning all the states in one conference?
Yeah, all the states.
Yeah.
And so really, it's going to be promoted more through GPT, uh-huh. through the parent company, because we really want to kind of put it out as almost not just regional, but national as well. We have some great speakers that we've already kind of, looked at. We'll do some breakout sessions, full-blown, mm-hmm. you know, day and a half summit. It's going to be at the Great Wolf Lodge in LaGrange, Georgia.
Okay.
November the 4th through the 6th, and so we're excited about that. So.
Okay.
That'd be great.
That sounds great. Looking forward to being part of that. So trying to wind up this interview, Lloyd, what do you see for pending bills in the Southeast region that will provide reimbursement for telehealth services? Anything exciting coming up?
Yeah. I mean, in our region, it's been pretty quiet. Georgia just recently updated their language, kind of closed the loophole in the language. And basically what it did was it really made Georgia what's considered a full parity state. So Georgia has had reimbursement, mandated reimbursement, since 2005 through legislation. But there was some loopholes there that could have been exploited, but they closed that loophole. So now we're a full parity state, meaning a physician's paid at the same rate, you know, as an in-person visit. So there's no differentiation between a telemedicine visit and an in-person visit.
Well, that's excellent.
Is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, South Carolina is kind of looking at some things. Not a whole lot. Really going on in our region from a federal mm-hmm. standpoint. The Connect for Health Act right now is kind of the thing that we're watching,
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. it's going to make some. If it passes, it'll be major changes for Medicare recipients in the in the area of telemedicine. So it's going to make some changes, like one of the big things is a rurality barrier. It'll change that. FQHCs and RHCs not being able to be a distant site provider is a hindrance in a lot of our rural areas. And so so this Connect for Health Act has some pretty big changes. So we're watching it very closely.
And what do you see, Michelle, in Massachusetts up here? Do you see any pending bills helping Massachusetts?
Oh, yeah. Well, Lloyd's right on the federal level. We've seen certainly a lot of things happening there. And then recently, of course, the federal changes to Medicare Advantage plans and things like that, where there's some reimbursement related to telehealth. But Massachusetts, which had been very far behind, in 2019, started down the road of parity in some fashions in the telepsych program. They can do telepsych visits from the home. So the site location of being home is huge, because folks that have, psychiatric needs, whether those be medication management or therapies or other acute types of behavioral health needs, they can do that from home. That removes the barrier of transportation completely, and stigma and all sorts of things that we see with behavioral health needs. And in terms of, chronic disease management, which a lot of folks that have behavioral health issues also have other chronic diseases, if we can manage the behavioral health, we can reduce the cost of chronic disease, which saves everyone, because the cost of care is rising every single day. And anytime we can manage chronic disease, that's huge. So having, that type of parity in Massachusetts, and the parity of payment that you see in Georgia and other states, it's just falling. Dominoes are just falling, and we're going to see those payments, reimbursement schemes really be improved over the next, I would say, in the next 12 months, 12 to 18 months for sure.
Great. Thank you so much, Michelle Hager from Blue Ceres, and Lloyd Sermons from the Southeastern Telehealth Resource Center, a couple of experts on telehealth. I appreciate your time today. We always want to provide our listeners with helpful information on the show, and I appreciate your help today regarding the Southeast Telehealth Resource Centers, Lloyd. And Michelle, I appreciate your expertise from Blue Ceres. Have a great rest of your week, and let's follow up again. Thank you, Lloyd. Thank you, Michelle.
All right. Thank you. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you, Lloyd.
We'll be back with Friends with Benefits, 95.9 FM WATD.